On a plane recently, I saw a child across the aisle watching a Disney movie on an iPad, and it occurred to me that film exhibition had come full circle after a century, one of the most ironic developments in the history of any art form. Thomas Edison, whose employee W.K. Dixon invented the first functional motion picture camera, completely misread the possibilities for film. He believed that the future lay in a box-like machine that individual customers would put a coin in to watch a 40 to 50-foot loop of film. The machine was named the kinetoscope, and the films shown in them were little half-minute-long views of people dancing, boxing, juggling, or some other amusing activity. You may have seen such machines or later reproductions of them in historical museums and parks or other places catering to tourists. Well, starting in 1894, kinetoscope parlors sprang up across the country, with the Edison Company producing hundreds of short films per year to supply them. We've become so used to the barrage of moving imagery in our lives that it's hard to imagine how amazing film was at first. Film scholars often call the first 10 years or so of the movies the novelty era, because a film of almost anything could make money due to the sheer novelty of the medium. So it's understandable that Edison thought that way too, and underestimated the potential of film projection. It's not certain who first projected a film onto a screen. The Lumière brothers in France have usually been credited with doing that in 1895, but there's evidence of earlier examples in America. In any case, projection on a large screen in front of an audience soon supplanted the kinetoscope as the way to watch movies. And it's easy in hindsight to understand why. The bigger image produced a sense of awe and spectacle that was impossible to get from looking into a box. Also, sharing the experience with an audience magnified the impression. Watching something together with others turned out to be much more satisfying than seeing it alone. And it opened the way for longer and longer films. Obviously, you can endure watching something in a theater longer than you can stand peeking into a little device. The longer form led eventually to the story film, and thus to the development of commercial cinema as we know it. About 50 years later, television became the first serious threat to this model. Now you can be visually entertained in the comfort of your home. The Hollywood studios, already panicked after losing an antitrust suit at the Supreme Court, fought back with widescreen formats. CinemaScope, Panavision, VistaVision, the list goes on. Why watch black and white shows on a little box at home when you could be overwhelmed with Ben-Hur or Lawrence of Arabia on a screen half a city block long? That strategy did help, but the smart studios invested in TV production themselves, while those who couldn't adjust, like MGM, died off. Eventually, color came to TV, and of course, larger and larger screens. Yet there was, and to a lesser degree still is, a general difference in quality between television and movies. Now, there was very little curiosity about film history prior to the 50s. Once a film had run its course, it was rarely shown again. The cinephiles who started writing about older films had to rely on revivals, and eventually little theaters were founded that specialized in these movies. Buster Keaton, for instance, had almost been forgotten until his films started to be shown again in art houses. Still, it was a daunting task. Sure, there were some older films shown on TV, broken up by commercials and often butchered by editors, but most of the time you had to hope for revival showings if you wanted to see an old movie. That all changed in the mid-70s, with the creation of videos, which of course later gave way to DVDs. Now, for the first time, movie lovers could watch films from all eras, uncut, at home, when they wanted to, and they could study them closely by pausing, rewinding, and so forth. It's impossible to exaggerate how lucky we are in this respect. I myself have seen thousands of films from the silent era onward that I would never have had the opportunity to see without the home video revolution. And with the recent advent of streaming video, the process has become even less encumbered. In particular, access to non-Hollywood films from all over the world and all periods of time has increased exponentially because of YouTube and other such internet sites. As with any great change, though, there has been loss. I still prefer to see a film in a theater if possible, and there are quite a few films that you really can't appreciate fully unless you see them on a big screen. I also love the experience of seeing a film, especially if it's a good one, with an audience. But with a noticeable decline in etiquette, a pet peeve of mine is that some moviegoers today don't seem to get that a theater is not their living room. The attractions of going out have been somewhat lessened. Thus, we return full circle to the kid on the plane, watching a movie on an iPad. 120 years later, Thomas Edison's original idea, in a much friendlier and sophisticated form, seems to have finally caught on. For Arizona Spotlight, this is Chris DeShiel.